Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This quick programming note before we begin today's newspaper. In order to give our volunteers and staff some time off during the holidays, today's will be the last newspaper broadcast of the year. We will resume reading the newspaper when the Recording Library reopens on Monday, January 4th.
Man charged with sexually assault 5-year-old, 2-year-old girls. OA News at OAOA.com. A 20-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly admitted to the Ector County Sheriff's Office that he sexually assaulted a 5-year-old girl and her 2-year-old sister. Michael Antonio Partida was charged with two counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child, family violence, a first-degree felony. Ector County Sheriff's Office was dispatched around 3:28 p.m. December 3rd in the 1800 block of North Fortune 500 Avenue in reference to a possible sexual assault. An ECSO probable case affidavit detailed. Deputies reportedly made contact with the victim's mother, who stated that her 5-year-old daughter made an outcry that her male roommate had inappropriately touched her. The male roommate was identified as Partida. ECSO investigators conducted a forensic interview with the 5-year-old and her 2-year-old sister, the affidavit stated. The 5-year-old girl and the 2-year-old girl each detailed to investigators that Partida had sexually assaulted each of them. After the forensic interviews, a SANE exam was reportedly given to the 5-year-old girl and the 2-year-old girl that provided evidence. Partida was contacted by ECSO, and he provided a voluntary statement to which he denied any physical contact with the 5-year-old girl and 2-year-old girl, the affidavit stated. A few days later, on December 11th, Partida reportedly contacted ECSO. Partida admitted against his own penal interest that he did in fact sexually assault the 5-year-old girl and 2-year-old girl. Partida was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on December 16th, jail records show. He has two bonds totaling $300,000 and was still in custody as of Tuesday morning. Man charged with slapping choking wife by OA News at OAOA.com. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed for the second time in less than 6 months a 50-year-old man assaulted his wife. Fermin Gomez Jr. was charged with continuous violence against the family, a third-degree felony. The second reported assault happened around 2:28 a.m. December 19th in the 1400 block of South Allegheny Avenue, the affidavit stated. The first reported assault happened August 16th. The complainant, identified as Marilee Ortiz Hernandez, reportedly told officers that her husband, who was verbally identified as Gomez, had arrived home intoxicated and asked her for his wallet. Hernandez stated that when she told him she didn't know, Gomez became verbally aggressive toward her, the affidavit detailed. Hernandez stated the argument led to the backyard, where he pushed her against the fence, repeatedly slapped her with an open hand in her face, and used both of his hands to grab her neck, as he stated he was going to kill her. officers reportedly saw Hernandez have visible redness and swelling on her mouth and cheeks, as well as light bleeding on her right cheek and on her upper back. Gomez was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Bond hasn't been set as of Tuesday morning, jail records show. Man charged with running over woman. OA News at OAOA.com. A 35-year-old man has been arrested after he purposely swerved into oncoming traffic and ran over a 36-year-old woman in West Odessa. Humberto Polanco Jr. was charged with murder, a first-degree felony. Deputies responded to a pedestrian accident at 9:46 p.m. Sunday in the block of 10500 West 16th Street, a press release detailed. At the scene, deputies reportedly found 38-year-old Veronica Carrillo lying dead in the roadway. The next of kin has been notified. Investigation showed that a black and color SUV was traveling east on 16th Street, where the driver, later identified as Polanco, purposely swerved into the westbound lane and struck Carrillo walking in the roadway, which caused her death, the press release stated. Polanco reportedly left the scene. He was later located, arrested, and booked into the Andrews County Jail. He has one bond totaling $250,000. The investigation continues. A Healthy Holiday Option by Brenda Garcia, MSRD, United Supermarkets Lifestyle Desk. 'Tis the season for lots of delectable goodies. You have cookies, candies, dips, and other seasonal delights. This is a seasonal delight of a different variety. A Christmas salad. Full of seasonal fruit and veggies, it's not only good for the body, but easy on the eyes. It really does come full of good nutrients. That's a good thing, and it's tasty too. Too often, vegetables get a bad rap of being boring or bland. It all has to do in how you prepare them. Let's start with the main vegetable here, mixed baby greens. Swiss chard, kale, or spinach will also work. The flavor of the mixed baby greens just tends to be a little more mild. Chopping them into smaller pieces lets the greens mix better with the other ingredients, picking up some of their flavors. Leafy greens are a great source of beta-carotene and vitamin A. These are usually found in orange and red vegetables. Beta-carotene is actually what helps give, for example, carrots their color. It does the same thing in the leafy greens. But the chlorophyll, which gives leaves their pretty green color, covers up the orange color. Think of the leaves changing colors in the fall. These leaves are just picked while they are at peak, so they retain their green color. Vitamin K and potassium are also generously provided by these leafy greens. Next up is the fruit. Apples, oranges, pomegranates, and grapes give this salad lots of beautiful color. The seasons collide in this salad as we are at the tail end of apple and grape season. Oranges and pomegranates are just getting started. Apples, oranges, and grapes are very common and well accepted by most people. Pomegranates can be a little bit more mysterious to some. If you have ever purchased a whole pomegranate, it can be a mystery just to figure out how to eat it. Do you really want to eat the seeds? Yes. And they are delicious. They provide a juicy burst of flavor plus a good crunch all in one bite. Try cutting the pomegranate in half, placing in a bowl of water and removing the seeds. also called aerials, while the fruit is still underwater. Or you can skip that step and place them ready to eat in a cup. The dressing is simple and light. A little goes a long way, so it may seem like it's not enough, but it's just perfect. Remember that the dressing is really not meant to mask the flavors of the fruits and vegetables, but to enhance the flavors. Enjoy the flavors of this salad along with your Christmas meal. Consider it a Merry Christmas to your health. For more recipe ideas, visit www.happyandnourished.com. Christmas salad. Ingredients: 1 5-ounce container of organic baby greens chopped, 1/3 cup pomegranate seeds, 3/4 cups red seeds sliced, 2 cutie oranges peeled and sliced in half, segments separated, 1 small onion diced, 2 tablespoons dried cranberries, optional, 1 small apple chopped, 1/2 cup pecans chopped. Dressing: 1 tablespoon maple syrup, 2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 1 tablespoon apple cider vinegar, pinch of chipotle or chili powder, salt and pepper to taste, 1 sliced toast cut into a star shape. Instructions: in a large bowl, toss together all the fruit and vegetables. In a small bowl, whisk together maple syrup, olive oil, vinegar, and chipotle powder. Add salt and pepper to taste if desired. Serve raw and chilled. Drizzle with dressing and top with toast star. Obituaries: Mary Bueno Carrasco, Odessa. Mary Bueno Carrasco, age 85, passed away peacefully December 18, 2020. She was born August 1, 1935, in Fort Stockton, Texas, to Arnolfo and Isabel Bueno. She eloped and married her longtime friend and love, Carlos Carrasco Jr., in July of 1953, who preceded her in death in 1985. Mary is preceded in death by her parents, Arnolfo and Isabella Bueno, devoted husband Carlos Carrasco Jr., son Carlos Carrasco III, daughters Joanne Carrasco and Raquel Rodriguez, sisters Mercedes Weiner, Yolanda Sarabia, and brother Alejandro Bueno. Mary was the beloved mother of Susie Carrasco and Ernesto Carrasco, sister of Irene Adams, Arnolfo Arnold Bueno, Joe Bueno, and Daniel Bueno, grandmother of 4 grandsons and 6 granddaughters, and a proud great-grandmother of 12 boys and 13 girls. Memorial service will be announced later by the family. The family would like to thank Star Hospice Texas Home Health, Nurses Unlimited, Dr. Madu and staff, and her nurse, Christy McDonald, who visited her weekly for many years. Very special thank you to her daughter, Susie Carrasco, and granddaughter, Marissa Morales, who provided invaluable care. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign the guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Amelia Gonzalez, Odessa. Amelia Yaya Gonzalez lived her life to the fullest. She loved her family and friends and her dogs. Her passion in life was to mold and shape young minds. She was born on March 30, 1947 in Alpine, Texas, to Jose and Felipe R. Espy. The family has deep roots in Alpine, Marathon, Big Bend, and Terlingua, where her mother was born. She was raised with her two sisters, Marie Torres and Anna Vigil. While born in Alpine, she grew up in Odessa and attended Ector High School. After high school, she dedicated herself to raising her two daughters, Grace Gonzalez and Rebecca Lopez. She met the love of her life, Santos Gonzalez. He says the moment he saw her, he knew she was the one. They married 2 months after they met. She passed on the day of their 50th wedding anniversary. She taught for many years in ECISD and retired as an assistant principal. Despite retirement, she couldn't stay out of the classroom and went back to teaching. She loved working with all the teachers and staff at Milam Elementary. She loved to travel with her husband and only grandchild, Jacob Lopez. They traveled the world together from Italy, Canada, and all over the United States. She often told people her most expensive hobby was her grandson. She is survived by her husband, daughters, sisters, grandson, niece, Carissa Torres, and brother-in-law, Ponciano Torres, and Adam Vigil. Public viewing will be Tuesday, December 29th, 2020, from 1 to 9 p.m. with a rosary at 7 p.m. at Frank Wilson Funeral Home, 4635 Oakwood Drive, Odessa, Texas, 79761. A mass of Christian burial will be celebrated on Wednesday, December 30th at 2 p.m. at St. Elizabeth's Catholic Church, 7601 North Grandview Avenue, Odessa, Texas, 79765. Burial will follow at the Los Angeles section of Ector County Cemetery. Death notices. Enrique Garcia Aguilar, Odessa. Enrique Garcia Aguilar, 76, of Odessa, died Monday, December 21st, 2020, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by the Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Tanya Bernadine Moore Clayton, Odessa. Tanya Bernadine Moore Clayton, 55, died Sunday, December 20th, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. William Lee Bill Huff, Midland. William Lee Bill Huff, 67, of Midland, died Saturday, December 19th, 2020, in Midland. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Natalie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Auden Ortiz Ramirez, Odessa. Auden Ortiz Ramirez, 38, died Sunday, December 20th, 2020, in Stanton. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Sylvia Ramon, Odessa. Sylvia Ramon, 52, died Monday, December 21st, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Larry Darnell Sims, Jr., Midland. Larry Darnell Sims, Jr., 47, died Friday, December 18th, 2020, in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Health and wellness. Springboard Center launches texting tool to help those battling addiction. By Caitlin Randall. See Randall at mrt.com. A Midland Treatment Center has created a texting tool for community members struggling with addiction in the hope of making resources readily available and easily accessible. Beginning Tuesday, about 400 people who previously completed a program at the Springboard Center will receive text messages instructing them to reply HELP if they need assistance with their recoveries, according to Director of Marketing Paul Colwell. Community members outside Springboard's existing network can also text HELP to 50700 to receive assistance. People who request help will immediately be contacted by Springboard staff, who can either walk them through the admission process or offer other resources, Colwell said. What we're trying to do is to find a better method of communication to try to connect with that person who knows that they need help, he said. Colwell said they developed the idea for a texting tool because most people have smartphones that they carry at all times. Texting has really become a first-mode medium for a lot of people, he said. We have a very short window of opportunity a lot of times when people finally come to the realization that they need help, and texting is just pretty much an immediate form of communication. Relapses have surged during the coronavirus pandemic as recovering addicts face increased isolation and economic difficulties. A study published recently by the National Institutes of Health found that medical emergencies and deaths caused by withdrawal have also risen this year. COVID-19 and addiction are the two pandemics which are on the verge of collision, causing major public health threat. The article stated, if someone texts HELP to Springboard but chooses not to enroll in an addiction program, they'll receive a follow-up message to check the status of their recovery, Colwell said. He said the treatment center also plans to send participants inspirational videos, daily meditations, and other content. Anyone wishing to opt out of future messages can text STOP to the same number. The initial message Springboard alumni will receive is, your journey to recovery begins with a single step. You are not alone. You are now connected with our team to receive important information and encouragement. To apply for admission or speak with someone, text HELP. Letter to the editor. COVID vaccine conspiracy theory is concerning. I think that I've heard enough conspiracy theories for a lifetime. In the 1950s, Senator Joe McCarthy, Republican, Wisconsin, was telling us that communists had infiltrated all aspects of life in the USA. Even though I was a child, I still remember his vitriolic appeals to people's prejudices, unsubstantiated accusations, and public attacks on the character, patriotism, of anyone who disagreed with him. Lies became his facts in his alternate reality. Some six decades later, we have unsubstantiated and unproven, in courts of law, allegations of massive fraud and conspiracies occurring in the most recent presidential election. History will deal with that, too. But now I am hearing another conspiracy theory of concern to me. Midlanders, from all walks of life, are asking if the COVID-19 vaccine is safe. As with many conspiracy theories, I am told that they heard things, unsubstantiated, from friends, and disinformation from conspiracy theorists, certain media outlets. Why do we repeatedly get fooled by conspiracy theorists? Here is one point of view from an unusual source, Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf. The size of the lie is a definite factor in causing it to be believed, for the vast masses of the nation are in the depths of their hearts more easily deceived than they are consciously and intentionally bad. Their minds render them a more easy prey to a big lie than a small one, for they themselves often tell little lies, but would be ashamed to tell a big one. I think that it is time to acknowledge that society, media friends, are conditioning us to disapprove and to react strongly to anyone who does not agree with us. Who breaks the cycle, and what if no one does? I will try, and hope that you will too. Dr. Samuel N. McFerrin, Jr. MMH joins Reading Initiative, from staff reports. Midland Memorial Hospital is joining the Reading Initiative, Power, Power of Words and Early Reading, beginning next month. Odessa's two hospitals, Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center, already participate, according to a press release. The families of each child born at these three hospitals in 2021 will receive a power bag, containing a CDC Milestone Moments baby booklet, a power brochure, power tip sheet, baby's busy day book, scholastic baby book, power magnet, power toy keys, and articles on brain development and reading. MCH and ORMC power bags will include the book O is for Oil, ABCs of Odessa. MMH power bags will include the book Good Night, Good Night, Construction Site. Close to 4,000 power bags were distributed at Odessa's hospitals this year, according to the release. Recent data has shown that more than half of kindergartners in Midland, Odessa were not kindergarten ready when they started school. Power believes that kindergarten readiness begins at birth. The purpose of this initiative is to encourage increased reading and interacting with children.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, December 22nd, 2020, Education Section. PSP Partners on Teacher Certification Program, from Staff Reports. The National Board of Professional Teaching Standards has entered into a partnership with the Permian Strategic Partnership and the New Mexico National Board Certified Teacher Network to increase the number of board-certified teachers. The initiative focuses on Ector County Independent School District, Artesia, Carlsbad, and Loving School Districts in Eddy County, and Eunice, Hobbs, Jowell, and Lovington School Districts in Lee County. Schools are the foundation of many communities, and the challenge with attracting families to live in the Permian Basin region can be alleviated by strengthening schools through supporting more teachers, according to a press release about the program. Research has proven a positive impact on board-certified teachers on student learning and teacher retention, according to the press release. Currently, there are only 12 board-certified teachers in the 8 districts partnering in the grant. We are so excited about this work to support educators in the Permian Basin region of the New Mexico and Texas. MBCTs are leaders positively impacting students, schools, and communities. The PSP partnership will provide financial support, mentoring, and resources for teachers. It will make a difference, said Peggy Burkins, MBCT president and CEO of the National Board. The project to support teachers to achieve certification is expected to help mitigate many common teacher recruitment and retention barriers. This project also is expected to support teachers to increase their salary, provide them with meaningful professional learning opportunities, give them the tools they need for career advancement, and will make it more attractive for teachers to come to and stay in these schools. The PSP seeks to accelerate educational improvements by supporting initiatives that expand and strengthen teacher talent available to Permian students, improve the professional development of educators and leaders, and equip school districts' leaderships with resources and partnerships for enhanced strategic planning, innovation, and execution, said Tracy Bentley, CEO of PSP. Children in school today will be joining the workforce of tomorrow, and quality education is critical for success. Our schools must have the resources to provide the next generation with access to highly qualified teachers and a robust curriculum. This investment will make it more attractive for teachers to come to and stay in these schools, and we are thrilled to partner with the National Board. The project will support annually about 5% of teachers in each district who want to pursue board certification. Community colleges can help speed up nation's recovery. The coronavirus pandemic has left a vast number of Americans facing the prospect of long-term unemployment. Those who lack post-secondary credentials may take years to find steady, good-paying work if such opportunities materialize at all. Community and technical colleges can play a key role in helping these workers gain the education and skills necessary to advance their careers. Yet, far from spurring an increase in community college enrollment, the current crisis is doing the opposite, which threatens to slow the country's recovery. Policymakers, state and federal, should increase investments in the 2-year college system, offer more generous support to students, and create incentives for closer partnerships between colleges and local employers. Before the pandemic, at least 8 million Americans were enrolled in 2-year colleges, accounting for nearly 40% of all undergraduates. Compared to 4-year schools, community colleges enroll a higher share of low-income students, minorities, and working adults. Half of all community college students hold down at least part-time jobs outside of school, compared to 40% of students at 4-year institutions. The pandemic has put the careers of many of those students at risk. Enrollment in two-year colleges typically rises during economic turndowns as students seek cheaper alternatives to bachelor degree programs and unemployed workers return to school to pick up new skills. This isn't happening this time. While enrollment at public four-year colleges has declined by less than 2%, community college enrollment is 9.4% lower than last fall, with first-year students plummeting by 23%. There are plausible explanations for the drop-off. The shift away from in-person instruction has disproportionately harmed poorer college students, many of whom lack reliable broadband access. And low- and middle-income parents also have to manage their kids' remote learning, making it harder for them to attend classes themselves. Pre-pandemic, community college students were already more likely to abandon their studies before receiving a degree. Of the 36 million Americans with some college credit but no degree, two-thirds attended community colleges. Over the long term, that can be costly. Students who complete at least a two-year degree earn more than $5,000 more per year than those who don't manage to finish, and also have lower poverty rates and higher life expectancies. Policymakers should address this brewing problem quickly. Congress should allow students to use federal financial aid dollars to cover non-academic costs, including child care expenses and at-home broadband. Restrictions on students' eligibility for supplemental nutrition assistance programs benefits should be eased. The government should also lift lifetime eligibility limits on federal Pell Grants to help older students obtain needed credentials and skills. States, for their part, should expand efforts to target adults without degrees and steer them toward careers in high-demand fields, as Tennessee's Reconstruct Initiative has done. Colleges should be offered incentives to promote evidence-based programs similar to the City University of New York's ASAP, which has raised graduation rates by providing students with free tutoring, career counseling, transportation subsidies, and other assistance. Federal grants can be used to promote closer partnerships between colleges, local industry, and labor unions so that students enroll in programs specifically designed to prepare them for available jobs. Revitalizing America's community colleges won't be cheap. President-elect Joe Biden's proposed $50 billion fund to invest in workforce training is a good start, but likely insufficient to meet the need. The U.S. commitment to community colleges should match the role they play as engines of opportunity for Americans who need it most. Midland College Profiles by Rebecca Bell. Grad says sonography program changed her life. Sarah Lack vividly recalls her childhood growing up in Hobbs, New Mexico, and living in poverty. It was a single mother household. There were a lot of times when we didn't know where we would get our next meal or have a roof over our heads. My mother worked extremely hard to provide what she could and instill the values of family and working hard in my brother and me. School was tough as well. I had really poor eyesight and struggled with reading and spelling because of it. My mom couldn't afford medical care or qualify for assistance, so I wasn't diagnosed and prescribed glasses until I was in about the fifth grade. It definitely affected me in all aspects of my life, and I certainly never thought I would be where I am today, having faced those struggles. It just goes to show that anyone can overcome adversity and make something of themselves. Midland College's sonography program definitely helped in the outcome of my life. Lack is now an echocardiographer working for Norlee General Hospital in Lovington, New Mexico. In that job, she uses imaging technology to help cardiologists diagnose heart problems in patients. She operates ultrasound equipment that provides moving 2D or 3D images of the heart and its chambers. Lack graduated from Hobbs High School in 2003 and then enrolled in New Mexico Junior College using federal financial and working multiple jobs to pay her tuition and fees. She received two associate degrees from NMJC. Although neither of my associate degrees is medically related, I guess I was always interested in a career in the healthcare field. In fact, my mom thought I would make a great physical therapist. I was hoping to transfer to Texas Tech, but we just couldn't afford it. Since I couldn't transfer, I decided to attend a massage therapy program and became a licensed massage therapist. Lack eventually accepted a medical office assistant / licensed massage therapist position in Hobbs, working for Dr. Conrad Dean, a holistic medicine specialist. She found that she enjoyed working in a healthcare atmosphere. Dr. Dean also took notice of her medical interest and skill. Many of our patients were from the local Mennonite community. Dr. Dean decided that he needed to expand his practice to provide care to the pregnant women of that community, so he suggested that I look into becoming a sonography technician. The idea intrigued me. After doing some research, I discovered that Midland College had a sonography program, so I applied. One of the most alluring things to me about the sonography program was it is super affordable. However, during the time that Lack was waiting to find out if she had been accepted into the program, Dr. Dean passed away. His medical practice was closed, and Lack found herself out of a job. She worked as a bank teller in Hobbs for a short time and then landed a position in the pharmacy department of Lee Regional Hospital and became a certified pharmacy technician. Lack was still interested in pursuing a sonography certificate, so when she received notification of her acceptance into the Midland College sonography program, she eagerly jumped at the chance to begin the program. Since I already had 2 associate degrees, the only general studies class I had to take for the sonography program was physics. Physics has a reputation of being a difficult subject, but it wasn't really that terrible. Once I started the sonography program, I worked the weekend shift at the hospital pharmacy, Friday evening, Saturday, and Sunday. Sonography lecture classes were on Monday and or Tuesday, so that made it easier to work while attending school at Midland College. I'm grateful that my mother-in-law lived in Midland and let me stay with her on the evenings before class. On Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, I was back in Hobbs performing my sonography clinical rotations at Lee Regional Hospital. It was a very busy time for me, but I knew that giving up some things for a short period of time would benefit me for the rest of my life. The sonography program was only an 18-month program outside of the prerequisites, so a relatively short period of time. I really enjoyed the program, especially the opportunity to work hands-on using the college's ultrasound machines. Area midwives would send their patients to the program for obstetric ultrasounds. It was a great learning experience. Lack said that the program probably also saved her life. One day in class, she volunteered for other students to scan her. During the course of the scan, the instructor could tell that there was something on her thyroid. As it turned out, it was a tumor. The thyroid tumor was biopsied during her clinical rotation, so the first biopsy she witnessed as a student was her own tumor. Sarah was one of those students that really showed determination to do well in the program. Lori Fitzgerald, Midland College Sonography Clinical Director and Associate Professor, said, "She never missed a class, and she never missed a day of clinical. Her evaluations were always great. She showed drive, initiative, and got along very well with her peers and her clinical instructors. She strove to learn so she could get every registry she could." Lack completed Midland College Sonography Program in May 2009 and passed the SPI, Sonography Principles and Instrumentation, registry exam. She continued to work in the hospital pharmacy. During this time, she married Christopher Marquez. Their son Maddox was born in 2011. When Maddox was 3, Lack was offered the opportunity to become a sonography technician. She continued working in the pharmacy for another year while balancing the responsibilities in the sonography department. Eventually, she transitioned full-time into the department and became the lead sonography technician. "I am so thankful that the hospital had enough faith in me to give me the chance to work as a sonography tech. My boss was willing to cross-train me in all types of sonography. We did a lot of echocardiograms and vascular sonography, so it was a truly great way to get experience in those areas." When Sarah started her first sonography job, they needed someone to do vascular exams, and she jumped right in, learned to do them, and sat for her registry. Vascular is not part of Midland College's sonography program, so she had to learn on her own by picking up a book and learning page by page. Lack is now a registered sonography technician in several areas. She has successfully passed the American Registry for Diagnostic Medical Sonography exams in obstetrics, gynecology, abdomen, and breast, which are the areas of studies offered through MC's program. She also went on to successfully pass the American Registry for Diagnostic Cardiac Sonography in Adult Echocardiography and the Registry for Vascular Sonography. She recently took the Pediatric Sonography Registry exam and is awaiting those results. "I usually spend a couple of months studying before I take each exam," she said. "I feel that it's important to have credentials in all the areas of sonography that I can. For example, as a mother, I would want a technologist who has proven to be competent in pediatric sonography to do an ultrasound on my son. It's reassurance for my patients that they have a qualified technologist." Lack worked at Lee Regional Hospital for a total of 11 and a half years. The last five, she was a sonography tech doing everything from general sonography to cardiac and vascular. Lack left Lee Regional Hospital in January and accepted a position working as a cardiac and vascular sonography technician at Nor Lee General Hospital. "Nor Lee has given me an opportunity to work with an amazing cardiologist and expand my skills and knowledge in adult echocardiograms. I'm very thankful that Dr. Dean suggested I look into sonography because I would never have thought of it as a career. I love working with patients and being able to assist in their care. I feel that it's important to visit with the patients and make them feel comfortable during the exam. Many times during a conversation with the patient, they will give me a different story than what they told the doctor. So it's my job to perform due diligence for the patient and take that information they tell me and use it to help me while performing a sonogram. If I don't see something and take a picture of it, then the radiologist doesn't see it. Therefore, the radiologist or cardiologist can't accurately diagnose and treat the patient. In that aspect, sonography is a challenging field, but it is also a very rewarding one. When I go on my clinical site visits, I'm always excited to get in to visit with Sarah and see what she has going on personally and professionally," Fitzgerald said. "Last time I saw her, she was renovating her house." Lack and her family still live in Hobbs, where her husband is employed in the oil and gas industry. Maddox is now 9. Her 18-year-old stepdaughter, Madison, is thinking of pursuing a career in the healthcare industry. Lack said she is grateful for the opportunities Midland College's sonography program has given her. She said it has greatly changed her life with a financially stable career. Some colleges cut or freeze tuition. By Janet Lauren, Bloomberg News. Hold on to your mortarboard. The cost of a U.S. college education has finally stopped going up. At least, that's the case at a small handful of liberal arts colleges that need to lure students in the middle of a pandemic. Oberlin College in Ohio has cut its tuition by $10,000 for all new students. Nearby Denison University is offering an even better deal for Ohio residents, a $100,000 scholarship over 4 years. And Davidson College in North Carolina has frozen its tuition for the first time in a quarter century. The COVID-19 pandemic has upended college life and college finances for millions. Now, in a sign of what might lie ahead, it also has begun to check the relentless rise in prices that has strained family finances and pushed the nation's combined student debt to over $1.7 trillion. As admissions deans stare down fewer high school graduates. The pendulum may be swinging a little bit toward the consumer side, said Steve Frappier, director of college counseling at the Westminster Schools in Atlanta. But that'll also depend on the selectivity of the school and the financial health of the school. This year has already been one of unrivaled chaos for admissions offices, with many devising workarounds for students unable to visit campus in person and waiving standardized test requirements. Freshman enrollment is down 13% this year, according to the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center, which called the decline unprecedented. It is not yet clear whether large universities with robust endowments and high demand will follow suit. Princeton in New Jersey cut tuition 10% for undergraduates for the current academic year because the pandemic significantly diminished the student experience. The Ivy League school, one of the richest U.S. universities, is expected to set the 2021-22 price in April. The cost for tuition, fees, room and board this year at Oberlin, known for its music conservatory, is almost $76,000. The school had been considering the tuition break as a recruiting tool even before the pandemic and decided that it should apply only to new students to limit the cost, said Manuel Caballo, Dean of Admissions and Financial Aid. In recent years, Oberlin has taken steps to make its application process easier, including eliminating fees and allowing students to self-report standardized test scores. Davidson's president, Carol Quillen, said the freeze hasn't devised as a strategy to retain students, but was to offer certainty on costs during uncertain times. The initiative at Denison, about 100 miles south of Oberlin, helped make the school more marketable to Ohio students and provide some stability to our enrollment, said Gregory Sneed, vice president for enrollment management. Denison, where the cost of tuition, room, and board fees is $70,400 this year, opted against making financial need a consideration for its $100,000 scholarship because applying for aid is already a complex process. We just want this to be simple in a complicated year. Some 1,200 students applied for by December 1st deadline at Denison, which has a total undergraduate enrollment of about 2,300. Some schools are offering more help based on financial need. Grinnell College in Iowa announced last month that financial aid packages will include grants that don't need to be repaid instead of loans. Still, the incentives at U.S. colleges are beginning to pile up as the universe of high school graduates is already shrinking in parts of the country, including some Midwest states, and is projected to decline nationwide in coming years. Schools are trying to ensure they have enough students for the next academic year, especially after the 2020 drop. If you're under-enrolled and under budget, those are pretty significant consequences, said Mark Hatch, vice president for enrollment at Colorado College in Colorado Springs. They're four-year consequences.
Does thalassemia affect A1C? To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 75-year-old male and was diagnosed many years ago with thalassemia. My A1C has been slightly high. Since sugar is carried on hemoglobin and my hemoglobin is disfigured with thalassemia, does it affect my A1C? Answer. The thalassemias are a group of disorders with abnormal hemoglobin molecules. Normally, there are four chains in a hemoglobin molecule, two alpha and two beta. The clinical variation among the different types is striking, from no symptoms to fatal before birth. It's estimated that 5% of the world's population is affected by thalassemia. This causes blood cells to be smaller than usual, and some of the blood cells to have a short lifespan. The A1C is a measurement of how much sugar is attached to the hemoglobin molecule. In people with normal hemoglobin levels, it's an excellent measurement of how blood sugar has been over the lifetime of a red blood cell. Since you have different hemoglobin molecules, the normal A1C range is not valid for you. To make the diagnosis of diabetes, a glucose tolerance test would be best. Measuring many blood sugars and taking the average is the most reliable way of following blood sugar levels in a person with known diabetes. In that case, it's important to get measurements after eating as well as when fasting.
Dear Abby, exposure of porn addiction rocks marriage of 40 years. Dear Abby, a friend of mine has recently discovered that her husband of 40 plus years has been hiding a decades-long porn addiction. The discovery has caused a problem in their marriage. They have had counseling. He says he wants to save their marriage and has vowed to give up the porn. I was told he told his wife that if she decides to divorce him, he will tell the entire family and their children that she was the one addicted to porn, and it is the reason he's divorcing her. My question is, What kind of person would treat his wife this way and think this is an appropriate way to save the marriage? Twisted in Kentucky. Dear Twisted, unfortunately, the husband has a problem greater than his porn addiction. It's his lack of character and honesty. His threat is not only inappropriate, but also a valid reason to end the marriage. P.S. I can't imagine why her family would buy that lie. Dear Abby, in 1972, when I was 12, my father died by suicide. I was told it was an accident. I was given an explanation, but the facts didn't add up. I suspected it was suicide. In 1998, my brother also died by suicide. Afterward, I asked Mom if Dad had done it too. She denied it, but I knew better. Around the time of my brother's death, I lost my best friend, co-worker, father figure of 17 years to suicide. His son was told his dad had had a heart attack. He is now a father in his 40s, and I think he deserves to know. Should I remain silent as I have for more than 20 years? In a moral dilemma. Dear Dilemma, years ago, when a family member died by suicide, it was considered shameful and kept a family secret. Because depression can run in families, these kinds of secrets can be harmful. Today we know more, and there are programs available to help families who have suffered this kind of tragic loss. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255, offers support to surviving family members. I do think you should talk to your friend's son. Introduce the topic by telling him what happened in your family, how much his father meant to you, and your concern for him and his own family, which is why you're bringing it up now. Dear Abby, it's not the first time, but certainly will be the last time I'm invited to a close friend's house without my baby girl. My 12-year-old retired therapy dog, Lady. Everyone loves Lady. So does my friend. I even have her portrait tattooed on my leg. Is it rude to not want to visit my friend's house because Lady is not welcome? Loves my lady. Dear loves, it's not rude. It is a choice. What I do think is rude is attempting to blackmail someone into allowing a loved but unwanted pet into their home, knowing it isn't welcome. If Lady were still a therapy dog, I might feel differently. But Lady is now retired, and her presence is no longer a medical necessity. Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Capricorn and a moon in Aries. Happy birthday for Wednesday, December 23, 2020. Groundbreaking, careful, and mentally quick. You refuse to fold under pressure. Thus, you have done better in this COVID-19 time than most. You finish your painstaking project by 2022, as it's marked for staggering success then. If single, you're working too hard to pursue love, so you stay single this year. If attached, you're with the person of your dreams, and it's a forever dream. Aries loves that you're stubborn. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. A glowing new vitality rushes through you. Travel opportunities can be a sheer joy. You will recover from old disappointments of the heart. Visits to cultural, historical, and sacred sites in distant places are highlights for the future. Tonight, enthusiasm and well-being. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 3 stars. Today begins with a tendency to keep your own counsel. Memories and regrets touch your thoughts. Dismiss old disappointments as learning experiences. It's best not to be naive about the need for routine safety precautions. Tonight, your sense of identity and destiny strengthens. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Goals are redefined and clarified. You will know what you want. Don't feel sad if a friend drifts away. New associates will be drawn to you soon. Tonight, you have a light-hearted inner glow that chases away winter's doldrums for others. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. Today makes your marvelous creative aptitudes a plus at work. Friends assist your professional growth. The skillful use of both writers and spoken words will open new windows of opportunity. Tonight returns your independence and lets you revel in your uniqueness. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. The holiday stirs a powerful spirit of adventure within you. Your motivation and enthusiasm help you accomplish a great deal if you steer clear of petty confrontations. Reread books you've enjoyed before or watch a favorite film again. Tonight, a relaxed mood with relatives. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Others have a beneficial impact on your finances. Something arrives to help your cash flow. Love has a transcendent quality. You could have a dream or vision about an ancient spiritual link with a loved one. Tonight, pursuing other mysteries in your life. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Today is marvelous for creative expression. Let the artist, actor, poet, or musician within you surface. You will experience a psychic link with your beloved and can establish a stronger bond. Tonight, express enthusiasm and team spirit to assure success. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. Today brings indecision from others. Allow them to revise plans, but stay independent. You will focus on important priorities. You will be motivated to seek wellness in every way. Study health-related publications and discuss fitness with others. Tonight, pursue what works. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 5 stars. Luck is generally good today. Be adventurous and don't take life too seriously. Love prospects are bright and promising. This is a highly creative day. Your leisure hours are rich and productive. Tonight, you help all those whose lives you touch. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. There is a hint that hidden facts about your heritage may come to light. Use your intuition in studying the family tree. If you sense a ghost in the house, its intentions are friendly and benevolent. Tonight, extra efforts at holiday decorating bring beautiful results. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Your positive state of mind wins admiration from others. Short journeys are productive. Gather interesting books and magazines to read during the cold, dark evenings. A neighbor is friendly and helpful. Tonight, the holiday holds a deep spiritual significance. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 3 stars. Finances are on firmer ground. Gifts, however, might be the wrong size or color, so keep all receipts. Double-check addresses to avert mail mix-ups. Resist the temptation to judge others by their income. Tonight, your expertise is helpful with a special project. Born today, illustrator Peggy Fortnum, 1919, trumpeter Chet Baker, 1929, writer Donna Tartt, 1963.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.